How do we think about development in a way that answers the current challenges and do so in a way that is consistent with who we are as development professionals? These are the key questions, and I'm just so grateful to have the chance to be here and talk to you all about this in this context.
There is no doubt that the events of the last 4 weeks have put aid, China, and the Indo-Pacific squarely on the map for many Australians.
The pace at which China has sought to exercise influence and raw power in the Indo-Pacific has been rapid.
Our region is being reshaped in great part by the strategic competition between the US and China, and most relevantly by China's increased aggression and assertiveness.
So the timing was good for the White House to send Unca Lee to Canberra, where he delivered an address at our Situation Room. Unca is USAID's Acting Deputy Assistant Administrator and Senior Advisor for the PRC. He's in town to consult on a policy being developed by USAID on countering Chinese influence.
China is important. Everybody wants to talk about it. In this country and mine, you know, politics is contentious, but there's one thing that everybody agrees on is China is a challenge. And so we get it. We have to be responsive to that challenge. But USAID is not going to be an agency simply obsessed with China. That's not what we do.
From the Development Intelligence Lab, I'm Bridie Rice, and this is The Readout. In this special episode, we're taking you behind the scenes of our Situation Room event, looking at the influence of China in the region and where development cooperation comes into play. Now, we normally keep our Situation Room conversations under strict Chatham House rules, but in this instance, we thought many more of you would want to know the USAID position on China. So Unca agreed that we could record just his opening remarks. As you listen, imagine yourself in our Canberra Situation Room warehouse, flanked by a group of 25 provocateurs drawn from the region, academia, government, and development practice. To your right, you can see famous foreign policy experts. To your left, some of the best development leaders from Australia and the Pacific. Behind you sit two youthful advocates, and in front of you, at the podium, is Unca Lee. Now, Hong Kong-born Unca had a certain TED Talk swagger about him and had the room eating out of his hand from the get-go. Here he is in his opening remarks.
Gosh, it's been a whirlwind couple of days. We left DC and then went to Fiji. We're in Suva and came here yesterday. And then after today, we're going to head to Sydney and then to Cambodia and then back to Washington. Because of certain U.S. government contracting rules, you know, we have to take weird flights, so we're just a mess right now. But I'm excited to be here because this is such a great space. It's interesting, it's innovative, it makes development just entrepreneurial. I think that's inspiring in many ways, to be able to see people who think differently, to be able to get together and just talk about what is the role of development in today's world? How do we think about development in a way that answers the current challenges? And do so in a way that is consistent with who we are as development professionals. These are the key questions, and I'm just so grateful to have the chance to be here and talk to you all about this in this context. So with that said, I just want to open up something rather personal. I'm actually from this part of the world. I was born and raised in Hong Kong, actually. I grew up in the city in the 80s, and remembering that it was only a couple years after Deng Xiaoping and Margaret Thatcher signed the Joint Declaration, as some of you may know, and all of you will remember, that, you know, the city went into a spin. Somebody was going to make a decision about the future without consulting us, that it was going to be done by London and Beijing. What are we supposed to do? And I remember as a kid, you know, growing up not far from Kowloon City, if you've been there, you know where it is, and it was not the same place that you see today. I mean, it was a pretty working-class neighborhood. I mean, this is my area, and I used to run to the fence of the old Kai Tak Airport, which, you know, when you fly in, you know, you just kind of like weave over buildings. You see people doing the laundry. You see people hang the clothes. That's how close you got to the buildings. And I would stand by the fence, and I'd go, gosh, I need to get out of here. you know, it was this Casablanca feeling, right? Take me away by the plane, the sight of airplanes, watching United and Pan Am's flying in. And most of my friends left. We had, I think at the height, 92, the year 1992, 60,000 people left the city. A lot of my classmates went to Australia. You know, the Hong Kong diaspora is strong here. A lot of my friends went to Canada. A few went to the United States. Some went to Europe. The world was spread. What happened in China percolated globally. Lives changed. Communities transported. And that's the constancy that we're still dealing with. I mean, the China question, how it is impacting lives, how it is changing things, and what it meant for us, and where people were sent as a result of decision made and developments happening in Beijing, that is the question still with us today. And so I'm just really excited to be back here now, this time more grown up, working for the US government to be able to have some of these conversations.
Here is where Unker switched gear. I'd asked him to be straight with our guests about two things. What is the problem that the USAID is trying to solve when it comes to China and development? And what are they going to do about it? Unker delivered provocative remarks on both fronts. Here he is talking about the motivations behind establishing the policy, including an early conversation he had with Administrator Samantha Power.
We are now starting for the first time writing a PRC policy at USAID. We've never had one, but we are doing so because we want to be able to very clearly say, this is how we want to contribute, and this is what we are going to be able to do appropriately as a development agency. And we want to be very clear about that. And so what is our approach? And I would just like to say, day one when I started this role last summer, the administrator being the former UN ambassador and the intellectual heavyweight and the legal scholar that she is, she's very exacting, right? She's going to say, I want you to tell me, like, don't say we need to push back against the PRC. We need to know exactly what the PRC is doing that is so detrimental to the development agenda. And then use that analytical framework to frame how what our response should look like.
Any good policy starts with understanding the challenges it's looking to solve. Unker then shared with the room five areas of PRC development activity that is of most concern to the US Development Agency. Here he is again.
So in that vein, we've kind of crafted out five categories of PRC actions that we find to be most detrimental and where we are going to be focusing our mind and equipment. The first one is, how is the PRC modeling itself as an example to the world, right? Initially through vaccine diplomacy, denting trust in authoritarian, in democratic processes, and if you have seen some articles of late, you know, even claiming themselves to be the model of democratic governance, right? People-centered democracy and the like. So what do we, as a development agency, what kind of tools do we have to help mitigate, push back some of those narratives? Second is enabling. How is the PRC enabling illiberal practices through the use, refinement, and export of technologies and tools? So I'm thinking about smart cities. I'm thinking about surveillance. I'm thinking about the building of telecoms backbone. So from a development perspective, what kind of tools do we have to help build resilience, digital resilience, in the partner countries we work with, right? So we're thinking about not just, offering the tools we can to help build trusted tech infrastructure, but also cybersecurity support and cloud storage in trusted ways. So I think that's something we need to be thinking about. Third is intervening. So how is the PRC intervening in the political and economic processes of foreign countries, especially in BRI critical areas? So elite capture, strategic corruption, the use of corrosive capital. What kind of tools do we have as an agency to double down on things like transparency programs, on rule of law programs, on civil society support, on journalist investigated funds, on labor rights groups, to make sure that the PRC economic impact and how they are trying to intervene in some of the political setup in these countries, that our partners have set up to rebuff some of these development. That's very clearly contrary to the interest. Fourth is shaping. How is the PRC shaping international institutions in a way that is more consistent with its foreign policy objective? So inserting language in the UN documents, you know, prioritizing certain things and undermining certain things in international bodies, defining what development is, that it's just about economic development, nothing else, not about human rights, democracy, governance, right? And also the question of Taiwan. Let's put it on the table, squeezing Taiwan out of international conversations. And, you know, following our president's directive, my president's directive, President Biden had said he wants to find a way to elevate Taiwan's meaningful participation in international affairs. A lot of international relations words here. But what that means is how do we, you know, make Taiwan look valuable and credible as an actor that can help just improve lives globally? And how can we partner with them to help curb the effects of climate change in the Pacific Islands, to curbing illegal fishing in places that matter, to, you know, helping to address the Ebola crisis in Africa? These are the things we'll be looking at with Taiwan. And finally, there is the point of reaching and silencing. So how is the PRC reaching and silencing voices globally through either coercion or things like the Hong Kong national security law? Again, I'll say that you don't have to be a Hong Kong citizen. You don't even have to be in Hong Kong. You can be an Australian citizen studying here and saying certain things about the Chinese government and then traveling over there, and you can be arrested. So what is that doing to encourage self-censorship? And what tools do we have as an agency to support diaspora groups, to support free speech advocates, to work with the State Department to make sure that voices are not silenced? And so that's our sort of outline of our analytical framework. We need something like this to lay out what the problem set is before we can actually dive into our response.
Okay, so at this point of the night, I was looking around the room to take in how people were responding. And there were a few nods, a few jaws dropping to the ground, and a few quizzical faces. To our ears, on the one hand, this was pretty stark stuff. Unker had outlined 5 problematic areas of PRC development. First up, the way it models itself to the world. Second, the way it enables illiberalism. Third, the way it intervenes in states. Fourth, the way it shapes multilateral institutions. And finally, the way it reaches and silences dissidents offshore. But what was the USAID response on this problem set? Well, it sounded more like classic support for robust and open governance systems. They're talking about things like funding transparency initiatives, funding journalists, increasing civic participation, and tackling things like corruption and supporting open technology as well. What's more, Unker wasn't making a case for outspending China or outbuilding China. To finish up his address, he articulated that an aid response to China challenges starts at home and it must follow a set of principles.
Let me just close with just a couple more, several principles I'd like to just sort of outline for you, because I think this is important. As we move full speed ahead on addressing the China challenge, there are a couple things we've got to keep in mind, and this is something the administrator is actually very keen about. The first one is, you know, again, these are sort of the you know, what we call them, the North Star, right? First is, yes, China is important. Everybody wants to talk about it. In this country and mine, you know, politics is contentious, but there's one thing that everybody agrees on is China is a challenge. And so we get it. We have to be responsive to that challenge. But USAID is not going to be an agency simply obsessed with China. That's not what we do. We have to have a China answer, but it cannot be defined by it. It is really about the American narrative and like-minded narrative that democratic principles are still the best foundation upon which to build open, transparent, and sovereign societies. It's not about China, its vision, or lack thereof. It's about our own. So that's the top line you always have to internalize as an agency. Second, the U.S.-China competition is really a ground game. So what that means is, you know, the work we do, it's going to be about demonstrating, you know, which model of governance is the most effective in improving lives. It's going to be about equipping the middle classes and the young people of the world to thrive and compete in the world. It's about advancing rights-affirming technology so that the dignity and privacy of people are respected. It's about making sure that we write the rules of the road, very abstract term, but anyway, the point is to make sure that we behave how we should behave as people globally. So for all those reasons, development should be at the table because we are the only agency in the government that works at the grassroots, community, subnational, national, multinational levels. And we need to lean forward, and that's what we need to do. Final principle, and I think this is probably one the most important, and that is language matters. I think from what we have learned in the last couple of years is that forcing countries to choose in a very blunt way is not going to be productive. It doesn't work. We need to be thoughtful about how we emphasize why we offer the better deal for our partners. And we need to care more about our relationship with our partners than their relationship with China. So that's something we just have to be more thoughtful about. You know, it's that's just how the world works. The other side of that coin, it's equally important, and someone like me is pretty sensitive to this, and that's because the rise of any Asian sentiment in the United States and in a lot of places around the world is a serious concern. And so we have to approach this challenge and this competition in a very responsible way. And as foreign policy leaders and professionals, as development thinkers and professional leaders, we have a responsibility to make sure that we frame it in a way that is consistent with who we are as a people in democracies. If we don't do that, we're going to lose this game outright. The Communist Party is going around the world telling everybody that they are the defender of ethnic Chinese interests globally. That is their propaganda. And it's also that, you know, we want to make sure that our story actually holds, and that is democratic societies can indeed protect the interests of our people, regardless of what they look like. And if we stick to that, I think we'll be in a good place to start. So I will stop there. And I'm just looking forward to the conversation, but thank you very much.
That's all from Unker in our Situation Room. His address sparked 2 hours of rich discussion. And for the Southeast Asian, Pacific and Australian ears in the room, the US position on aid in China was news. The fact that Unker's position exists within the US Development Agency and that the US has a Countering Chinese Influence Fund and is preparing a formal policy for its development agency on countering Chinese influence sounds a lot more overt than what we're used to here in Canberra. And that's because there probably just isn't as much consensus in Australia when it comes to the merit of using aid as a strategic asset. There are broadly three different but all legitimate narratives that are swirling around the Canberra community and our development sector when it comes to using aid to counter Chinese influence. Here's how I explained it to the room on the night to help everybody start the conversation off on the same page. The first narrative is the one we loosely call the strategists.
The first comes from what I'd call the strategists. Right? So the strategist narrative would go something along the lines of China is absolutely a threat to Australia and Australia's interests in the region. It's also a threat to the region itself. Countries like Australia need all tools of statecraft to counter this influence. The aid budget is a convenient bucket of money and a convenient way to generate access and influence for a country like Australia. And if you're subscribing to this narrative, then you're thinking about the way that an aid program could be spent to cultivate elite relationships, perhaps to deploy Australians into overseas positions more and more. So that's the first narrative.
And at the other end of the spectrum is the second narrative, from the aid traditionalists.
Now, many amongst these people would agree with the China threat narrative. Some wouldn't necessarily agree with the extent of the heated debate at the moment. But what their fear is that the China debate will securitise aid to such a degree as to render it ineffective. They would prefer to see countries like Australia playing by the international agreed norms of sustainable development. They'd prefer to see a development program focusing on impact. And they will be very suspicious about Australia's capability to be tying national interest to a poverty reduction agenda for aid and development.
And then the third narrative comes from somewhere in the middle, from what we call the pragmatists.
Now, not because they've got practical ideas, they've probably got far more questions than they do solutions at this point in time. But the pragmatists along this spectrum would perhaps agree that aid does have a place in a national interest discussion about Australian foreign policy, but they would also believe in the regional good of development, as well as the domestic dividends it might derive a country like Australia in terms of our influence in places like the Pacific. But this group of people are perhaps unconvinced that Australia has necessarily done the work to articulate how our aid program both serves our poverty alleviation and development attempts at the same time as generating influence around or countering the threats of China at this point in time.
So, where to from here? Well, at the lab, we'll continue to watch the USAID China policy with a close eye. But we're actually more interested in what it means on the ground. More support for civic space, transparency, and the sort of vibrant debates that keep leaders in check. It's music to our ears. But what of Australia's response? Is embroiling an aid program in the China debate a good move? Well, so far our answer goes something like this. In a perfect world, we would not be seeing our aid and development footprint through the prism of competition with China. But we also don't live in that perfect world. There are already many signs that our aid program is ticking to a China drum, from infrastructure announcements to the recent Solomon Islands responses as well. But does it mean that DFAT should establish a formal China policy for its aid program? Probably not. Australia doesn't need to be as out and proud as our US counterparts on that front, irrespective of your position on China policy. But we do think Australia has work to do under a new development strategy to get a clear-headed picture of what our comparative advantages are when it comes to development and how this has shifted or not amidst geopolitical competition. This means doing the work to be clear on what the challenges are that we want to tackle, what the development tools are that we want to use, and what principles are in place on what Australia will and won't use its development dollar on when it comes to the China question. On this score, the US process is not a bad starting point. The readout is brought to you by the Development Intelligence Lab. The show is produced by Madeline Flint with production support from Anna Van Vliet and Isabel Coleman. The music is by Viljami Metto and it's hosted by me, Bridie Rice. Special thanks in this episode to Anka Lee, Blake Crystal and Evan Medina from USAID. Subscribe to The Readout wherever you get your podcasts and you can get in touch with us by heading to devintelligencelab.com.